highest of heights to the depths of the sea. Creation's revealing your majesty. From the colors of fall to the fragrance of spring. Every creature you make and the song that it sings. All exclaiming, indescribable, uncontainable. You place the stars in the sky and you know them by name. You are amazing, God. All powerful, untamable, awestruck, we fall to our knees as we humbly proclaim. You are amazing. Both where it should go, or seen heavenly storehouses laden with snow. Who imagined the sun and gave source to its light, yet conceals it to bring us the coolness of night. None can fathom indescribable. You place the stars in the sky and you know them by name. You are amazing, God. All powerful, untamable, awestruck, we fall to our knees as we humbly proclaim. You are amazing, God. Indescribable.
It's because of his wonder, it's because of his glory and his grace that we can come before him and worship him this morning. So please join us as we sing this next song. Let the worshipers rise.
Father, I see that you were drawing.
I'm not afraid to die. sons and the daughters see.
Meditate on the glory and wonder of God, and the gift of His Son, Jesus, and the gift of the Holy Spirit that can be in, around, and among us and be the comforter when we're in the midst of difficult times. So please, join us with this song.
Spirit, rain.
Son, and the fact that you care about each one of us on a very individual and personal level, God. We just ask that your presence be here this morning. Be with us, walk with us. Be part of our lives. In your holy and precious name, amen.
Morning. It's pretty tough to follow that, isn't it? That was beautiful. I want to add just a little bit to what Terry said about what I do. I do recruit physicians for this campus, but the one thing I would want you to know is that I get the privilege of working every day with some of the greatest people that I know and that work on this campus. I work in a wonderful executive team. And I get the privilege of working with the 700 clinical faculty that work here. And it is a joy and a privilege, and I'm humbled by it every day. I want to start today by sharing a couple of my favorite verses with you. In John chapter 10, verse 10, it says, "The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. And yet I have come that they may have life and have it more abundantly." Lamentations chapter 3 tells us that God is faithful, and it says, "Great is your faithfulness." And lastly, in Jeremiah chapter 29, it says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future." And then before I begin, I want to share one of my favorite quotes that has become more or less the fabric of my life. It's found in the book, The Desire of Ages, and it goes like this. "God never leads his children, otherwise than they would choose to be led. If they could see the end from the beginning and discern the glory of the purpose that they are fulfilling as co-workers with him." I love that. I'll go back to the beginning. I was raised in a Christian home, probably not much different than many of you here. I had parents who were deeply devoted to Jesus. They served him, their church, and the world around them. In fact, my roots contain more preachers than I could ever even dream to count, so I'm not going to try. My father was one of them. And there were many great things that came along with that. I went to church every week. I went to prayer meeting every Wednesday night. Oh, I was Pathfinder of the Year one year. That was awesome. I guess the truth is there's only 15 Pathfinders in that club, so it wasn't probably that big of a deal. There was church school from start to finish, camp meeting every summer for our vacation, and then every Christmas there was the ingathering process that my father absolutely loved. all of those things are wonderful things, and yet somewhere along in that road of my life, I picked up this idea that if I followed a particular list of things, things would be great. If I went to church every Sabbath, things would work out better for me. If I paid my tithe, I wouldn't have financial problems. And that cause and effect went on and created a very large list of things. Oh, I'm not saying that those lists are bad. But what I am saying, that maybe the dependence upon them as the reason why we get good things is probably not something that leads us to building our house on that rock. So before I go into the details of the story I'm going to tell today, I want you, first of all, to recognize that God is absolutely, without question, the hero of this story and of my life. No matter what you hear, I pray that it only points you to Him. Second, it is a very simple story and a story of a flawed life, and it's only a snapshot and therefore incomplete, and I know He's not done with me yet. My story begins just about 10 years ago here in Loma Linda. It was March of 2000. It had been only a year and a half since my family had moved from the Midwest to Loma Linda, and it was a school day. However, that morning I was just simply too sick to move. My little girls needed a ride to school, and I lived several miles up the hill. My elderly mother lived with me at the time, and I couldn't lift my head from the pillow. It had been 4.5 months since my husband had walked out. And all that time, I had just simply been in a mode of survival, and it was catching up. I had also just started a brand new job, the job I have today, and I was terrified that I was going to lose that job. Unfortunately, at that particular point in time, it really didn't matter because I couldn't move. And I couldn't get out of bed. I reached for the phone and called one of my few friends that I did have and asked if he would please drive the 6 miles up to my house to take my girls back to school. He said he would, and I told my girls that he was coming, kissed them goodbye, and told them I would see them later. And as soon as they left, I picked up the phone again and I dialed 911, knowing that something was terribly wrong. After I made that call, I simply just rolled off my bed and tried to make it to the bathroom, but I collapsed on the floor and I couldn't move. Off in the distance, I could hear the ambulance coming, and I knew my mother downstairs was going to be terrified, and I had no way to tell her what was going to happen. The pain was increasingly intense, and the next things that occurred are really blurs to me. They came into the house, the paramedics, they picked me up, and I barely remember the ride down to the hospital, but I woke up sometime later in a little tiny room in the hospital ER with a window and little bits of pieces of things that didn't make any sense to me. Someone asked if I wanted to see Lou Vinden. He's my cousin, and I remember barely that he came and prayed with me. The only thing that was really working in my mind right then were my memories, and the truth is, they were as torturous as the pain. My list was not working out right now. What had really happened, and where had I failed, and where was God in all of this? I had actually prayed that if moving to California was the wrong thing for us, please stop it, and God had not stopped it, and I was here. But the painful part was that was the second divorce for me. 7 years earlier, I had gone through another one back at Andrews University that was devastating. And I was so sure that this one was a gift straight from God. But it wasn't, and there I was, and my chest felt like somebody was sitting on it, and I was sure that I was going to die. I didn't know what was wrong with me. I couldn't really understand much what things the doctors were saying to me at that time. And then I thought about my little girls. What was going to happen to them? Hours went by, and I finally was moved out of the ER into a room, but there again, I was alone and in isolation. Doctors came in all the time with students and residents and stood around my bed and talked in things I didn't understand. And I was so confused, and I was so scared. I did learn that one of the dear mothers at the school had taken my girls and said she would keep them till this was over. And although it was a little comfort, it didn't stop the ache in my heart and the out of control that I felt. The truth is, today, as I stand here and share this with you, it is extremely painful to me. These words have stayed silent in journals until now. However, they have driven and defined how I live and work and how I view people and how I function. But somehow talking about them brings back a pain. I do want to share with you a quote from a book that I've been reading most recently before I go forward with my story. And it's kind of a wrestling story about Ruth and Naomi. And you know that story is one of betrayal and famine and death and more death and being alone and not fitting in. And yet this author, as she's wrestling with what happened at 9/11, is really struggling. And she says, you know, Christians are really great pretenders. We tell ourselves it's not supposed to be this way for Christians, and yet you know what? Sometimes it is. And so that's the world I found myself in right there. And in that hospital bed, I decided right there and then I had a choice to make. I didn't want to pretend anymore. I didn't want to live in a world of masquerades. I wanted to be honest about who I was and who my Jesus was. And I remembered a conversation I had had with another cousin preacher many years before where he had told me that it was all about Jesus, that he loved me. Inexplicably, he loved me. And I made a choice that day that even if the Bible was only 5% chance that it was true, that I was going to throw everything I had in on that 5% because I was not going to miss out on the chance to sit with him someday and have him fill in the pieces of my story so I could come to that conclusion that I would choose it no other way. In closing, I just want to share with you that 4 weeks ago, tomorrow morning, I received a call from the nursing home down the street. The nurse told me that they were losing my mother, and the paramedics were there. My heart had that exact same crushing pain, and I got there just in time to know that they had just pronounced her dead in the same ER room. And the same questions came back, and the same crushing pain came back. And then I remembered that agreement I made with him, that even if only 5% was true, I was going to hang on to that. And no matter what, I was not going to lose that. You know what? He's faithful. He is absolutely faithful. In Joel chapter 2, it says, I will restore unto you the years that the swarming locusts have eaten. And you know what? God has restored much of that. When the enemy just tries to kill and destroy us, he has restored. I have the experiences every day of his love through a wonderful husband, two beautiful daughters, a wonderful son-in-law, and the team of wonderful people I work with here at Loma Linda. I am grateful. I want you to know that there's one truth that comes through all of this. The God of the universe that loves me is the same God of the universe that loves you. The same God who held together Naomi as she dealt with incredible crushing pain that caused her to even question the character of God. That same God is holding on to me, and he is holding on to you. The lists that you create in your life are meaningless unless Jesus is the center of them. Every gift he gives you is a gift that he is praying you will give back to him, and it can bless so many people as you go forward. You know what? I have a mansion. You have a mansion just over the hilltop. I would ask today that you join me in choosing him for your life, and we can go there together. God bless you all.
Read stories about the disciples and thought, Man, these guys are ridiculous. Because I have. Growing up, to me, they seemed like some of the most forgetful people on the face of the planet. Take the story of Jesus calming the storm, for example, a story most of you know well. The disciples are heading to the other side of the lake in a boat. Jesus is asleep in the back because he's absolutely exhausted. A raging storm comes, and now the disciples think it's the end of the world. Now, I'm not trying to make light of storms. I would probably get afraid too, but let's review a few things here. Many of Jesus' disciples were grown fishermen. They have lots of experience on lakes, in boats, and most likely with storms. Also, they were not alone in the boat. Jesus was there with them, and they had been with this man long enough to see him speak truth with authority, heal person after person, and even raise someone from the dead. Somehow, though, in the face of the storm, all of these things were forgotten. Did you ever wonder about Peter? He didn't start doubting about walking on water until he was already doing it. This means that he forgot the miracle that God was working in him while it was being worked. You might say, cut him some slack. Maybe it was early in Jesus' ministry. That's fine. Let's skip to the end of his ministry. Do you remember how Peter denied him 3 times? He somehow forgot all the times that Jesus had been there for him, and he somehow just forgot as the fear gripped his heart. When I was younger, I never understood what their problem was. It was easy, at least from my point of view, knowing the end of the story. Man, if I had been one of them, I would have never doubted. Seeing those miracles face to face, just one of them, would have been enough to keep me believing for the rest of my life. They saw him work miracles day in and day out, and how quick they were to forget. Why weren't they counting the miracles? Why weren't they counting the blessings? Why didn't they remember? Oh, judge not, Jessica, lest you be judged. Oh, as I've grown up, I'm beginning to realize the increasing size of the plank in my own eye as I zealously attempt to remove the speck out of my brother's. 2 Thanksgivings ago, we were gathered around the table, and in honor of tradition, we were going around the circle, as many families do, and saying thanks for things that had happened during the year that we were grateful for. Every year, I would say something like health, great family, good food. And while I'm grateful for these things and don't take them for granted, sincere thanks, this year, I wanted to be more specific. I wanted to be more sincere. So I racked my brain with increasing panic as my turn rapidly approached. My heart was beating faster and faster. I can't think of anything, and suddenly it's my turn. I really wanted to be specific this year, but I just can't think of anything, I blurted out. My family just sat and looked at me in shock. Really, Jessica? Really? How about your husband? Now, while I am grateful that I do have a husband, and not only just a husband, but the most wonderful husband in the whole world, this is not what they were referring to. What they were referring to was an experience that my husband and I went through the previous March when he broke his neck in a surfing accident. Yeah. When the neurosurgeon showed me the imaging of his neck, I couldn't believe that he could still wiggle his toes, let alone that he was still breathing. As he explained to me, just a slight, barely twist more, and he would have bled out one of his vertebral arteries. And as I saw the way that the vertebra was compressing the spinal cord, it was beyond belief for me. I mean, it was so far in there that he had no sensory deficits whatsoever, or any deficits for that matter. By that Thanksgiving dinner, God had already brought us through surgery, a slow healing process, but one during which my husband had been covered by sick days donated by his colleagues. Sick days, which, by the way, ran out the exact day that he was well enough to go back to work. He brought us through my step one boards, a mission trip to Haiti that both of us went on, and he had already brought Jeremy through his first game back to playing basketball. In fact, Jeremy was healing so well, I was already beginning to forget. So to say that I had nothing specific that I could think of to be grateful for, that was ridiculous. Not the first of many forgotten miracles or acts of love, this is just a recent example of what God has done for me and how easily I have forgotten. In the book of Deuteronomy, Moses takes time to remember. At the end of his life, at the end of another 40 years of wandering in the desert, just before the leadership is passed to Joshua and just before the Israelites pass into Canaan, Moses gives the Israelites the address that is the book of Deuteronomy. He recounts their journey as a people out of Egypt. He recalls the mighty works of the Lord as well as the shameful acts of the people. He calls everyone to remember everything that had happened and to cling to it so that they would not forget what God had done in them when they again faced the fear of moving forward to take the land. You see, the Israelites were at a crossroads. Last time they were at this point of crossing into Canaan, they freaked out, bailed out, and told God, sorry, can't be done. Now, 40 years later, after more trust had been built, they are back at the water's edge. Before charging them to go forth and cross the Jordan to take hold of the land that was long ago promised, Moses takes time to stop and to remember. He remembers with his people all that God has done for them in the past so that their faith could be built on something solid for the future. Deuteronomy 5:15, remember that you were slaves in Egypt and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Chapter 7, verses 18 and 19, but do not be afraid of them. Remember well that what the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and to all Egypt. You saw with your own eyes the great trials, the miraculous signs and wonders with which the Lord your God brought you out. The Lord your God will do the same to all the people that you now fear. Chapter 4, verse 9. Only be careful and watch yourselves closely so that you do not forget the things your eyes have seen or let them slip from your heart as long as you live. Teach them to your children and their children after them. I have an aunt who always keeps a journal in which the family writes down the times that God has pulled them through. She and her husband review it together and share it with their children. They pass down the ways that God has worked in them in the past so that they continue to build their trust in him for the future. Many times in my life, there have been important decisions to be made and difficult situations to traverse. The most recent of these just may or may not have involved making a rank list for matching into a residency program. Other difficult times may have included the death of a best friend, watching a loved one purposely and deliberately turn and walk away from God, knowing that a certain patient wouldn't be there the next morning for rounds, and it's not because they got better. And just choosing to follow, even when things have been dry for a very, very long time. It is in times such as these that remembering is that much harder, but that much more important. It is for times like these that you keep track of the things that God has done so that you can remind yourself that you are walking on solid ground. So with that, here are some of my rememberings. I remember how he moved my family out to California for my high school years and how the relationships that were formed there changed my walk with him forever. I remember when God reminded me one day as I was freaking out about making the right decisions in life, future spouse, future career, reminded me that I had already made the most important decision that I could ever make, to stick with him. I remember how he healed relationships between family members that I never even dreamt would budge. I remember painting my classroom during my year as a student missionary with a slurry of paint in the bottom of the bowl that just never seemed to run out until the room was completely finished. I also remember that year how he protected my family and I from the taxi drivers that had other intentions for us. I remember when he taught me how to fail and also that he loved me and was proud of me anyway. I remember how he gave me my summer working at summer camp that I had always dreamt of and thought I wasn't going to get the chance to experience. I remember my last year at college when I was worried about making a long-distance relationship work, how God handed Jeremy the job of his dreams on a silver platter, and how that job just happened to be just down the road from where I would be in medical school. And now, I remember all God did for Jeremy and I when he broke his neck. And by the way, there are countless things that he did during that time for us that I don't have time to share with you now, but if you're curious, please ask me afterward. I just am overwhelmed by his graciousness. There are many things that lead us to forget, but for me, the two biggest are fear and complacency. I used to think the disciples were silly, but with time, I've grown to understand how fear can wipe my memory clean if the acts of might and power that God has shown me are not etched deeply enough. I have also watched vivid memories grow dull during times when I have not had to call on them for strength, during times when the sun is shining down on me and the world is all as it should be. In these times, if I am not careful to recall all the acts of love that God has shown me, I also forget and begin to drift. Many of you are familiar with the song, Blessed Be Your Name. It's one of my favorites. But it talks about praising God in good times and in bad times. And I think that taking time to remember really teaches you, it helps you to praise him from your heart, no matter what is going on. Take time to remember. Write it down. Talk with others. Recounting and remembering how God has worked in your own life and even in the lives of those around you gives you something on which to build your relationship and faith. It gives you something that is not so easily shaken. It gives you strength during tough times and builds a loving and grateful relationship during the good. If you feel you don't have anything worth remembering, now is the time to ask God to start reminding you or to give you something new to start off your collection. Not if, but when he gives that memory to you, you write it down and you remember. You brand that moment in your mind as one brought to you by God so that later on, when doubts and questions of coincidence spring up, you can say with confidence, no, I knew God was working in my life at that moment, and so I can continue to know that God is working in my life today. So like Moses told the Israelites, only be careful and watch yourselves. Watch yourselves closely so that you do not forget what your eyes have seen or let them slip from your heart for as long as you live. Teach them to your children and to their children after them. Remember.